I am grateful to Ina Cohen, Public Services Librarian of the Jewish Theological Seminary in New York, for providing me with two English translations, such as they be, of the Qumran text of the parable of the tree. One occurs on page 400 of the 1997 book by Geza Vermesh, The Complete Dead Sea Scrolls in English. As becomes evident, this is really a far from satisfactory presentation of the surviving facts. Vermesh's translation runs to 8 short and incomplete lines in English, and on these he comments, "This text comprises a badly damaged fragment of which only the opening lines provide any coherent sense. The topic seems to be the giant good tree which produces thorns." Ever so much more satisfactory is what is presented, edited and translated by B. Nitzan, in the 2004 book, The Dead Sea Scrolls Reader, Part 4, Calendrical and Sapiential Texts, edited by Donald Parry and Emmanuel Tov, the second of the versions sent to me from New York. Here we find enumerated no fewer than 141 lines from 18 fragments of the work. The majority of these lines and fragments are so defective and damaged that they produce little or nothing that can be translated meaningfully or contextually. But it helps us to place the lines which Vermesh translates if we are aware, as B. Nitzan makes possible, that Vermesh has given us a rendering of what are lines 43 to 46 of the total of 141. Since so much of the text is defective, it seems certain that the complete original text was longer than 141 lines. But what B. Nitzan's scrupulous presentation of the deducible evidence makes clear is that the lines translated by Vermesh have been preceded by a lengthy introductory section, setting the scene, as it were, and themselves do no more than again set the scene for a lengthy summing up and conclusion. We have not the remotest hint in what Vermesh gives us of this essential contextual reality. Let me illustrate in practical terms what I have been describing. What Vermesh gives us, you have on page 5A of your service sheets under the heading Parable of the Tree. The heavy Roman II before sages alerts us, if we are on our toes, that that part of the text that should be one is missing. What you cannot deduce from Vermesh's sparse presentation is that a few decipherable lines survive of fragment 3, according to B. Nitzan, and regrettably small elements of fragments 4 to 18, a very few decipherable words in each of fragments 8, fragment 10, and fragment 17. Let me give an illustration of Nitzan's thoroughness by reproducing what he gives us for the end of fragment 1 and the beginning of fragment 2, overlapping with the lines translated by Vermesh, And you have these lines on page 5b of your service sheets. Although reading and interpreting fragmentary texts is an exceptionally fraught and complicated exercise, we can at least make a stab from Nitzan at a wider comprehension that begins to be possible with Vermeersch. And that wider comprehension is my primary purpose here today. Let us start, as seems only right and reasonable, with the lines from fragment 2 that are common to both Vermeersch and Nitzan. Even here, there are noticeable discrepancies. Vermeersch's translation, that the good tree grows as far as heaven and its branches reach to the extremities of the lands, is rendered by Nitzan, the good tree towers unto the sky, and then two gaps, and then the word lands. Vermeersch's filling in of the gap to the extremities of the lands is clearly not completely impossible, but simple common sense suggests that the writer is describing a tree of enormous size which reaches high into the sky, Nitzan's translation, and with its vast, widespread branches, covers a huge extent of ground. Not far from the entrance gate of Kew Gardens, about 5 minutes' walk away to the right, is a massive specimen of chestnut-leaved oak, the largest known specimen of this variety in the world, fitting exactly what is here described in the parable. And such a tree, which has really to be seen to be believed, can certainly be understood as a symbol of perfection and wealth and plenty, both physical and metaphorical. Vermeersch's translation that the vast tree produces thorny fruits seems somewhat questionable in common sense terms, since thorniness is not an immediately obvious benefit. Nitzan's rendering that the tree produces the best fruit puts us in mind of the vast, i.e. unpruned olive trees of Spain and Italy, graphically described in 1884 by C.P. Johnson. The large, untended trees so often seen in Spain and Italy do not yield that certain income to the peasant proprietor that some authors have attributed to them. The crop from these old trees is often enormous, but they seldom bear well 2 years in succession, and in many instances, a luxuriant harvest can only be reckoned upon every sixth or seventh season. And Nitzan's translation of the fragments of verses 7 to 9, untranslated by Vermeersch, to increase branches from its root to rear and its branches must represent vestiges of the farmer's continuing efforts to promote further growth of the tree and thus increase its fruiting capacity. As mentioned previously, the tree properly cared for is a symbol of plenty and positiveness. Fragment 1, column 1, is thus quoted by Nitzan, and you have this passage on page 5c of your sheets. Insofar as it is possible to judge and form conclusions, the contrast here seems to be between God's chosen people, Israel, see verse 10, and the other less holy nations by which Israel finds itself surrounded, verse 12. One may further surmise that because God is righteous, verse 4, and shows bounty over all men, or over good men, verse 5, the people of Israel are contrasted with the other nations who are, because of their unrighteousness, subject to God's anger, verse 3, and one affliction after another, verse 2. The presence of the words his sanctuary and his words commandments in lines 6 and 14 of the Nitzan translation, reproduced on my third type page, serves to reinforce the notion of God's chosen people as a race apart. One does not need a surplus of imagination to see the direction in which this imagery tends, or how the separated elements of fragment one are linked to the larger self-connected fragment two. The people of Israel are likened to the large and fruitful tree. As the farmer tends his tree, being rewarded after all his labor with abundant harvests, so God, who has bestowed his bounty, fragment 1, column 1, verse 5, on his Holy One Israel, verse 10, sees the rich harvest of benefits which flows from their devotion to him. In sum, the farmer of fragment 2 is symbolic of God himself in fragment 1. At the end of fragment 2 and in fragment 3, something catastrophic happens. Here is Nitzan's fragmentary translation, and you have this at the bottom of 5C. The large tree fails and has to be cut down, verse 7, and the ultimate insult in a Jewish context is ravaged by boars, verse 6. God's extreme anger is palpable, fragment 3, column 2. What has occurred and what is being described? One has to understand the Qumran context in relation to Jerusalem. The Qumran Brotherhood had left Jerusalem and set up by themselves and for themselves in the desert because of their overriding conviction that Judaism in Jerusalem had been fatally compromised by accommodations with non-Jewish attitudes and approaches. The parable of the tree must therefore, in its final section, of which only tiny and insubstantial fragments remain, as we have seen, have been an apocalyptic warning, not unlike John the Baptist's scathing reprimands to the crowds flocking to hear him early on in the New Testament Gospels, not to incur God's anger by failing to turn to him. In effect, on this understanding of things, only the true believers, in other words, those at Qumran, can be saved. Those who are not true in this sense, i.e. those in Jerusalem, are irretrievably doomed to damnation. This is a much starker and more primitive use of parable than that of Jesus. It is unyielding and, in the last resort, condemnatory. Jesus is both more forgiving and more encouraging. He appeals not in general terms of condemnation, but to the individual to understand what is right to reach the Father's kingdom, which is a home of warmth for the blessed, not primarily on the whole, an area from which others are to be excluded. For Jesus sees things from a positive perspective, not a negative one. He, in effect, describes the glass as being half full rather than half empty. Amen.